we were just surprised and a little bit unsure of why Brian was looking in our dugout. Again, it wasn't the first time he's done that, so I think guys were kind of fed up with it. So I think everyone's reaction was just kind of, you know, heat of the moment. A couple of games in Toronto was kind of the same deal, and, you know, competitive athletes kind of take exception after a while. Everyone's out there trying to win. So when it's a reoccurring theme, you just kind of question it a little bit.
Spicy ball game. It's a Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. J.D. Bunkus. My buddy Sam McKee with me today. Boys were yawning today. Jay's delay got the boys a little caught. The yawns were hitting.
Quite honestly, it's a miracle I'm here. I set my alarm this morning for 4 p.m. as opposed to 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And
welcome to the show, kid.
Thank you. And my eyes opened, and I looked at my phone, and it was 4:55 a.m. And I was like, oh, probably should get up.
I'm surprised you were so sleepy then. That's a great adrenaline shot.
The
panic of thinking
immediately got me out of bed.
Yeah.
Like, if I could channel that into, like, every morning getting up, I would do it. Because it would just immediately got me out of bed.
Well, this job sucks for one thing that used to be a principle of mine, which was, if you're late, you're late.
Mm.
There's no difference.
Yeah.
Once you pass 5 minutes late,
but
you're an hour late.
The thing with me is, I am never late.
I know.
I have never been late
Although, I do kind of think that Sam is one of the guys who says he's never late.
No, I'm never late.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
And if I'm late,
God forbid, you're late.
If hell freezes over, I will call and text and be like, I'm going to be 5 minutes late. I can't believe
protocol for the thing that you never do.
Yeah, but I'm never late, so.
But it's never happened.
But if in, you know, this outside world that was going to happen, I would call or text or whatever. But I'm just the most.
Yeah. Hey, do you know what? Do you know what I think is the truth?
What?
I think you're a late guy who just is a guilty late guy. I think there's a big difference. I think that there are late people who are just, I don't care if I'm late.
No.
And then there's you who is always late, but says he's not late.
I honestly can't even have this conversation. It makes me so mad. One of my true pillars in life is how prompt I am. And actually, like,
you know what your other true pillar is? Loving that block and the plate rule. Boy, how horned up were you yesterday when you saw your favorite rule get to be in play again?
We're doing this already.
Mr. Winner, hey, that's baseball to you.
Two after six in the morning here.
Hey, listen. That's the game that you love. That's the game you love. You said you saw that play and you went, boy, oh boy, this is why you play the game, is to see moments like this. And you thought, I don't have any children, but I can't have no child. And not share an experience like that with them.
I don't want violence for my child's life. So I would prefer to have no collisions to the plate. So yes, you're correct.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you're right.
See? You love it.
I can't let Lou Dog see those guys running into each other to play.
A lot of people with the rule that were Jays fans that were just clapping and hooting and hollering about how great that rule was a month ago. Yeah.
Here's what I'll say about
this
that.
This is why you stay consistent like me.
I never ever said it was a good rule. I was just happy. The Jays needed that win so bad in Minnesota. Thinking back on that, like, didn't they? I feel like they went for a crap after that. Like, they needed that win specifically so badly.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It was, you know.
Whit Merrifield is a genius, everyone.
He was.
That's Whit Merrifield.
He was. And Rutschman last night was immediately like, hey, I'm a catcher. He blocked the plate.
Has Whit Merrifield crossed home plate for the Jays since that moment?
I honestly don't think so. I don't think he has crossed home plate.
Automatic out.
100%. So, yeah.
Stop playing him. Why are they playing Whit? He's brutal. He is brutal.
It's got to be only reputation. Because he's an everyday player, quote unquote. He played every single day. He was like the Iron Man.
Dude.
He played forever. So they would think at some point he's going to pull out of it. But these games are too big for him to just bounce out to short or strike out or pop out.
You absolutely cannot have it.
So
you know what was the real story yesterday for me anyways? Because, we're going to talk about Kikuchi. We're going to talk about Schneider. And, the home plate rule, listen, at this point now, Jays fans should know, never celebrate a win that way. Because it's bad karma.
Last night wouldn't have mattered anyway. They would have made 9-6 instead of 8-6, whatever. They weren't scoring.
Bo was coming up. Kirk was coming up.
They weren't scoring three runs of that guy.
All right.
I don't think it mattered that much last night.
All I'm saying is that rule stinks.
For sure, but Twins fans have a way bigger beef than Jays fans do. Like, there's not even close.
In terms of the stakes of the game. The stakes of the game, for sure. But Jays fans have a bigger gripe in terms of the way that it actually was lined up.
What do you mean? Lined up?
Kirk is... Look at where he is. He has to be in the middle.
Yes, but he knows, like, man, you can't cross over the thing. It's a stupid, horrible rule. But by the letter of the law, correct call.
But stupidest.
Honest, oh my God, it's so dumb.
It's got to be... I was thinking about this last night. It's the worst.
When Kipper's sending tweets about the rule, I'm like, oh boy, it's bad.
it's the worst rule in professional sports. Right now, today, it's the worst rule.
That's a good question.
I used to think targeting was the worst rule because a lot of times targeting gets misdone. Like, it doesn't get done properly. The other night, there was a clear targeting play right in the LSU game where it's the crown of the helmet.
That was horrible.
And that's where it should be applied, right? As you go, hey, obviously that's a dirty shot. You should be able to have it. But targeting way too often just gets some poor kid who's in his last college game.
But that's in theory, that is a good rule, right? At the basis of it, the intent of that rule.
Yeah, but the intent of this rule is to also
not have a guy run into each other at home plate. I guess
one guy got hurt, Buster Posey, and then went. Boo, 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 hoo. We got to change it. We got to ruin MVP. The game.
Yeah. I don't know. Listen, it's stupid, but, like, that was the right call. Kirk can't do that. He knows he can't do it. He crossed over home plate. Like,
here's what I would just say about that call. Here's why this call stinks, and I was thinking about this, why it's one of the worst rules ever, is because if you were just sitting down with somebody and you were watching the game and they had never seen baseball before.
Try to explain?
Yeah.
Yeah, impossible. Truly impossible.
How many people in the stadium last night?
No, Rutschman. One.
Yeah. How many people last night, and I knew it right away too. Same. In Rutschman, because he's obviously a baseball genius.
He's first ballot Hall of
Famer. Where's Rutschman ranking among your most favorite players, like guys you would want on your team starting a team next year?
Like, he's in the top 10 now for sure.
He's unreal. Yeah. That take he had last night?
Oh, yeah, I think he must have been cheating. I don't know how he knew that was coming. Someone must have been banging on a garbage can.
You know what? That's fair. That's fair. That's a good take. That take. I thought about all the people in the stadium and their friend who knows less about baseball than them, right? Because there's always the dynamic whenever you go to a game, one person knows the most about baseball. They might not know a lot about baseball, but one person at the game knows more, generally. Mm-hmm. And whoever was the lesser...
That's me when I go with you. I know more than you. And that's how it goes.
You know more than me.
No, I'm just giving you a hard time. Okay. We'll continue your point.
End of show. We're calling it today at 6:07. The lesser looks to the person who knows more about baseball at the game and goes, what happened? Mm-hmm. And everybody in that stadium went, he's blocking the play. And they go, yeah, why? How? They went, well... It's just the way it is. that's the end of the discussion. Horrific.
But
horrific,
the two guys even standing around the plate that had come in to score were standing there.
Yeah, they knew.
But they didn't even react badly.
I thought you were talking about Rutschman.
Rutschman.
Yeah, he knew.
He knew.
Yeah.
But the other two guys that were standing there that had just come home, they both were like, oh, he's out. Like, they didn't even react. They didn't point. They didn't do anything. No. They just were like, yeah, he's out. It's over.
Yeah, because guess what? That's out.
He's out.
Mm-hmm. That's out.
It's been out 110 years of baseball.
Imagine Babe Ruth. You bring him alive for one day, and you show old Babe.
Probably wouldn't want his
plan. Oh, he's going right back in the grave. He's just like, I'm out of here. You know what? I'm good.
I'd rather perish again.
Let me back in the grave. I don't want to watch this. No, thank you. He's going immediately back in. So, yeah, that rule stinks. I don't think that's very controversial.
No.
This is going to be the echo chamber show because... Who liked the Kikuchi decision? And this is what I hate about the Kikuchi decision. I knew it was one of those things where everybody on Twitter was going to light it up.
Oh, yeah.
And I just stayed out of the fray. And obviously my phone blows up. Everybody in my regular rotation of people I text about Blue Jays with is just like, what is this? What's happening here? Why are they doing this? And I thought, maybe he's doing this because, one, the charts... I just always blame the charts whenever.
Big chart move, I thought.
I thought maybe it's the charts. But two, I thought maybe he saw what happened with Mitch White tonight and went, come in here in a big spot and have two outings where you're building up that confidence and then you're going back and you're starting. Or at least you're in the conversation for it. The only issue
it's actually an interesting perspective that if you can perform in a big spot, you can start again.
That he brought him in on another big spot. Because Kikuchi's coming off of his best performance in months, basically?
Yes. Yeah.
Which was, a bullpen game where he had to come in for a couple of innings. There's just no defending it. And I know Kikuchi.
He didn't even look that bad.
No, he didn't. He didn't. He gave up a hard hit ball and he got punished for it, but you can't do that. You just can't bring Yusei Kikuchi in that spot out of the bullpen in a huge game against the Orioles when it's razor thin like that. And yeah, we can play all the different. I think that still stands as the game winning run. I know the game played out differently, but that ended up being the game winning run. That was the difference in the game. And I just don't think how
it was until a meaningless. That's single what
I mean. I just don't know how you can ever justify believing that Aaron Loop was seven pitches. Sorry, I don't know why I've called him Aaron Loop. I've done this a billion times.
Anthony Bass.
Bass.
Yeah.
I don't know why I've done it, but I
couldn't be more opposite.
No, dude, I can't get out of it. I it's just because I think about
like, Aaron Loop.
No, dude, you know what it is? It's just that it's a throwback guy that used to pitch for the Jays. Yeah. And I remember everybody thought maybe they were going to get Aaron Loop at the deadline. I thought, you know what, Aaron Loop might be a nice
fit.
Loop
is poop jokes.
Yeah, I know.
Just used to fly.
Either way, but I've done this a million times in private. That's the first time it's actually come out on air.
All right. Okay.
Bass at seven pitches. Mm-hmm. Guy's been lights out. You're feeling so confident about him. All I was thinking, too, was this deadline. That was the story of the game. This deadline has been so bad for this team. Whit Merrifield, unplayable. Mitch White, my God, nightmare.
Unpitchable.
Mm-hmm. They needed that extra reliever, and you saw it last night because Trevor Richards has to come in and leverage, and that's exactly where that extra guy would be coming in and trying to get outs for you.
Mm-hmm. Keep it a one-run game.
Exactly. And then they got Zach Pop, who's whatever. It's a project. It's not exactly. He was never supposed to be a win-now guy anyway. People trying to pump that up a little bit too much when it happened. The one guy you got, you don't use him enough?
No.
You get the one guy at the deadline that actually is helping you, and you decide, hey, let's get him out of here. It's the one guy that we went out and needed. It just sucked. I hated the decision. I just don't really understand how to justify it, and we'll talk to some other people today, but
it was just mixed messaging managing for me. Because you start with leaving in Mitch White for one batter too long.
Yep.
After Santander.
That was bad, too.
After Santander.
Schneider had a bad night.
He did. After he gets the RBI ground out, and then there was two men on still, he's like, right away, pull him.
Yeah.
But then he goes to a high-leverage guy. Well, I guess Merriweather isn't necessarily a high-leverage guy, but getting him there, like putting him there, that was a good call. And then goes to Bass in the fifth, and you're like, okay.
You're the only one who thinks Merriweather's a high-leverage guy. I know.
I'm tantalized.
You are. I'm tantalized. You love Merriweather, but it's just not a thing. But anyway.
Not as much as Chris Black, but I do love him. And I'm so then you go to Bass in the fifth, and I'm like, oh, here we go. Like, this is a good spot.
Yep.
And then back to Kikuchi, which was inexplicable. Mm-hmm. And then he goes to Richards, who he leaves in for too long.
Yep.
Like, I know the pen's taxed. It's not even that taxed.
Mm-mm.
He left him in for too long there, too, and then it's over. So I thought Schneider had a really bad night until he comes out and absolutely eviscerates Jeff Nelson. And you tweeted it. I don't really want to say many bad things about him on the radio because I don't ever want him to yell like that in my face because, oh, my God. Like, the difference in what they look like mad between him and Charlie, it's like, oh, my God, this guy at least looks scary when he's mad. He was in his grill.
To me, I thought about how much more intimidating he was than Teoscar Hernandez and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. getting mad.
I don't want to move past the managerial stuff yet, but like,
when those two guys left the dugout, I went, what are you guys going to do? You going to go dole out hugs? You guys are the biggest sweethearts on the team. Like, it's like your whole thing is that you're always smiling and laughing and yucking it up with everybody. Now you're going to fight?
Yeah.
There's no way. Imagine trying to close your eyes and picture Vladdy throwing a punch.
I can picture it.
I can't. I can absolutely not.
He's been fired up a few times.
No, he's a grab a guy in a pile guy. That's it. That's the only move he's doing. And Teoscar Hernandez, it was amazing. And I don't want him fighting at all. Like, I don't think this is not a shot.
No.
I've never seen anyone run into the hold me back pile quite like that. Like, he deviated. He ran a route to the pile where I was like, I don't really want to go in there. And then he did the fake after, just rip out of the jersey move when it was already done. But, yeah, weird night.
I don't know what happened. I don't know how, like, I know Kikuchi had one pretty good performance when he came out of the pen.
Can't justify it.
But, like, I don't know how we went from him being the guy that pitches in a blowout to him being, like, the higher leverage lefty. It just happened. And then you ended up using Mays anyway.
No, well.
So it's like if you were going to go to a lefty, you should use Mays there.
Yeah. So.
I really thought it was a bad night from Schneider. I really did.
To me, it was what we were tweeting about with Blake. They had already made up their minds.
For sure. It was a premeditated
Jeff Nelson
decision.
Thing. Yeah. They knew he was coming to that ball game one way or another.
For sure.
And they thought, this is the spot to bring him in. And this should be safe. And guess what? It wasn't, because nothing's been safe with that guy all year. Yeah. So, yeah, again, impossible to justify it. This is always just the way, right? You can't play. You do get to play the results when it's guys like Yusei Kikuchi. I don't care if you have more information. I don't care if that you guys knew you were going to get
into
the ball
right
game.
Away that was a bad decision.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And yeah. And it was an easy one for everyone to point out and go, oh, wow, you're bringing in the bad guy in a big spot against the team that's chasing you.
Yeah.
Easy thing to point out.
For sure.
To me, that was an overthink. And that was a spot where they went, you know what? Maybe let's adjust the plan here. This ball game's tight. Bass is at 7 freaking pitches. Of course we need him. But the whole thing with these pitch monitoring things or these systems, like, that's why I'm saying it is the charts. Because they went and said, we're not letting him get more than 4 batters.
For sure.
And then they look at it and they go, yeah, but it was 7 pitches. And they go,
And he cruised.
Yeah.
He was throwing BBs.
Yeah, of course.
And it just, that's the thing. That goes back to what we used to whine about early in this tenure. Remember 2020 and 20, like when they win those playoffs? And remember we used to yell about how, like, the premeditated decisions?
No, premeditated.
That's what it felt like. And it's like, I was truly like, oh, maybe it's not the manager that's making these calls.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's something that we would have killed Charlie Montoyo for. And then it's like, oh, that, well, he was probably told to do that by something that was printed off a computer.
Well, it's interesting because I think a lot of Schneider's decision making seems to be in-game
feel. Agree.
And then last night,
I was so out of left field that I did not expect that.
Yeah.
When he popped out, like after he gets the fourth out,
yeah,
I was like,
he gets to stay in. Good.
And then he pops out immediately. It's like, Odor, you can't get Odor out. I know he's a bit of a splits guy, but like, you can't get Odor. And then you got Mateo.
Odor is killing the Jays though.
Oh, I knew it. When me and Gunnar went on Friday and we were talking about this series, we were just like, he's going to have a big impact. There's no doubt.
Even that slide last night.
Amazing.
You're magic.
And he's the guy that's at the holding back. I'm like, what are you doing? Throw some punches. Let everybody hate you again. Like, what are you doing?
That didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah. He was like holding back Vladdy. Yeah.
Imagine he punched Vladdy.
Oh my God.
Imagine he faked like, I'm just holding you back, and then bam, suckers him.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That would have been great for the show. So do you want to talk about the fight?
I think the fight was embarrassing for the Jays.
I agree. It's too bad we don't have an opposing.
They kept going, well, let's see another angle, because they went, what are you doing?
Yeah. So I guess Baker had been chirping him a bit after Teo hit a home run yesterday off of him, right?
Yeah.
Or the day before he hit a home run off of him. So apparently he was pissed off. And then so he hits into the double play and Baker says probably like, hey, man, way to hit into a double play. And then he's like smiling at him. And then he gets out of the inning in a big spot with a couple guys on. Hits him with the talk too much.
Yeah.
The whole bench does not need to do that.
Well, okay, I'm of two minds on this, though. One is Jays have gotten a ton of criticism this year as being too friendly.
Yeah, for sure.
They've been everyone goes, hey, yeah. Some people in this room have said, could Vladdy not yuck it up with the guys at first base every time?
Who? No comment.
Yes. Yeah.
Doesn't sound like something I would say.
I'm just saying that for a group of guys that often gets criticized as being overly jovial.
Yeah, but maybe pick your spot a little better than that.
I agree. I told you. I thought it was embarrassing.
Yeah, yeah.
I went, that's it? That's what you guys are doing right now? Just, I'm saying I could see how a lot of people look at it right now, and this is actually the polarizing part of the show where they go, no, they actually showed some fire, they showed some heart, they showed some anger, they're in these games, they're being competitive, sure. They showed a little hate. I thought that it would have had the potential for me to actually create a little bit more Orioles hate had the Orioles done something to kind of fire this up.
I know.
It really wasn't anything, and it was. And again, it was the fact that it was Teoscar Hernandez and Vladdy that both ran out of there and thought that that was such a big slight. I went, hey, you guys had just done chirping.
Yeah.
You guys do pimp a lot of your shots.
Yeah, you're like outside of the dugout celebrating like it's the World Series every game.
Of course.
Which I love. I don't care about that.
That's
but like
the flair and the attitude of the team.
But then when somebody else does it, you got to hit. But listen, and the most embarrassing part for me was they were like, Shulman's talking about, it's Baker that they're upset about. And they're like all yelling, and then they just flash to Baker, and he's just like putting his glove in the dugout and like sitting there being like, what?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, God. And then, you know, he's talking about it. Schneider's talking about how he gave up runs or whatever. it's a competitive game. Listen, I agree with you from the perspective that it's nice to see them show some fire, but yeah. I would definitely like them to pick their spots better. Like, somebody came up to me, like, somebody tweeted at me about this, and I said, you know, Alec Manoah literally yelled at a guy and told him, sit down, B-word, and the benches didn't clear.
I think one time, Manoah's going to Nolan Ryan somebody.
Like, tonight could be the night.
Yeah. Well, Manoah hits dudes. He hits batters. So is he going to have a whoopsie tonight? I kind of feel like there could be a little bit of an oopsie. One of the things, too, with baseball is we all are just used to these things being fake fights, and oftentimes they turn out to be nothing. And then the odd time they are, they blow our minds. But there is something about being living in a country where we watch hockey and there are fights all, like, not, I guess not all the time anymore, but where there is fighting culture in the sport.
For sure.
And thinking about Teoscar and Vladdy coming out of that dugout going, guys, you're in the middle of a playoff race. It's September. What? You're going to fight? You're going to get suspended for 5 games?
You're going to break a hand, punching someone?
Like, what are we doing here? Just chirp. Just talk. Why do we have to do the theatrics? And I wanted to go to bed, so I went, great, this is another 10-minute talk. Like,
great. When Richards walked, whoever that was, in the eighth, I'm like, can we?
Richards, I just knew. This guy has stung me all year long. Anyway, weird game.
I'm really excited for tonight now, though. Because, listen, you put in here about hate and about bringing back this rivalry.
It's a great spot for Manoah.
It is. And this has been one of the like big rivalries for the Jays, you know, like through those 2014, 2015, 2016 years, those games were hot. Like, they were always big games, and I hated the Orioles. I hated their sort of all their guys. I hated a guy we're going to talk to today, Adam Jones.
I just never really hated the Orioles.
Oh, you did? Oh, I did.
I hated the Orioles when the Jays played them in the postseason.
Oh,
I played
them
in a wild card game. I hated them badly, but there's almost a kinship
for
me.
So you obviously don't hate this Orioles team?
Not yet.
Not yet?
No.
No, okay.
Last night was a step in that direction because of the bench is clearing. Mm-hmm. And I went, oh, what did this guy do? Because he got Teoscar mad.
Yeah,
he got Vladdy mad. He must have done something. And then when they showed it, I went,
Oh.
This is kind of cringy. Don't do that. I don't hate him yet.
No.
They haven't been around long enough. Right now, like I said, I look at them and I go, I respect. It's hard to hate a team that's basically the Bad News Bears of baseball, who has no budget, plays in a beautiful ballpark. The thing that I think I like respect the least about them is, if I was a baseball fan in their city, I'd be going to every single one of those games right now. Like, hey, tickets are obviously cheap. You can get them for nothing. Mm-hmm. It's a fun team on the rise. This is the innocent climb portion of who they are.
Yeah.
And they're scrapping and clawing trying to get in the playoffs after a bunch of guys got sold at the deadline.
And they could stink out loud next year, too.
Of course. Right?
Like, this could be like next year they
stunk out loud for four seasons in a row. So why wouldn't you be going to these games?
You might be afraid to be hurt again, you know?
Then you're a loser.
Yeah, for sure.
Sports is all about getting hurt. But that's the entire thing.
Just to give them a shout out, I loved Hyde bringing in Tate in the fifth inning as well.
Yeah.
When it was like, you know, they had a couple guys on, the starter put a couple guys on, and then he brings them in a big spot. I didn't think he pitched particularly well. I thought the Jays missed a ton of hangers off of him, including Vlad, who, if you want to talk about that now, we'll talk about that with Ben probably. But like, I love the fact that he actually like went to his high leverage guy, because the game before, everyone was killing him for making old Zimmy go out there and just eat it for, he was out there for 4 hours pitching Zimmerman in the rain. So I liked managing for Brandon Hyde last night. It's a great game, man.
It was an exciting game.
It felt like a playoff game.
It was a really, really, really good game. And that's what I'm saying. I don't have the Orioles hate. I just don't.
I do.
I've always viewed the Orioles as the sister city almost to the Blue Jays, where they're not the Yankees, they're not the Red Sox. And I've always hated the Rays more, because the Rays have just tortured the Jays. And they also, I got so sick of the Rays are smarter than everybody else thing, where I went, shut up. I don't want to hear.
The Rays are my number one least favorite sports franchise.
That's what I'm saying.
The team that spends no money
and does it well and encourages everyone to try to do it.
Yeah, they've ruined baseball.
That's what I'm saying. I have so much more animosity for those other three teams that I just never had it for the Orioles. And I've always liked a lot of Orioles players. I like their uniforms. Yeah, I know.
All right. Well, maybe tonight we can add a little fuel to the fire.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, they're not as easy to hate, and I don't hate these guys yet. And yeah, I just Rougned Odor.
Yep. And last thing before we go.
Yeah.
Jeff Nelson's a disgrace.
He is a disgrace. I thought,
like, truly.
I
Like, outside of everything, the balls and strikes, again, awful. Like,
some of those strike calls.
The low ones, the high ones, the inside, outside.
Off the plate, he's outside. Really bad. You're looking at some of these, they're a foot off the plate. And then he has the gall to just be so dickish about it.
Oh, he just got that look in his face.
Oh.
Like, you get it. Like, no. You get wanting to just eviscerate him. And John Schneider got his licks in. What did he say? It's not about you?
This is why I actually do respect hockey referees more. Hockey referees take it on the chin from players. There's tons of trash talk. Guys say things to referees in hockey that are, and it's different because you can't hear as much that's down ice level and on the, like, you know what I mean? It doesn't get picked up as much. Mm-hmm. I don't feel as though there's as much hero reffing in hockey as there is in other
not
sports.
Even close.
And
it's just too fast a game.
Yeah, of course. But in basketball, it's awful.
Yeah.
And in baseball, it's awful. These guys are known, you know? And in football, there's definitely the hero referees, and you know who they are.
And you know Wes McCauley in NHL.
But yeah, but he's more theatrics,
yeah,
right?
He's like bubbly.
And people love him.
Yeah, yeah.
People love Wes McCauley. Yeah. There's not hate for him. Sometimes he's a bit much for me where I go, okay, man.
Fighting!
Yeah.
We get it, pal.
But I'd rather he want the attention that way than just making wild calls.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was it last night with Jeff Nelson, where he's just awful. The show. People are not there to see you. I don't understand why
Schneider
you think
said.
You are.
That's what he said to him. It's not about you.
Yeah, it's not about you. But I really do think some of those guys think it kind of is.
For sure.
And not to reference the same doc, because neither of us really liked it, but the Tim Donaghy one, that's it, right? Is Tim Donaghy's talking, he's going, a lot of these players are my great friends. And I went, what are you, you guys are out of your minds.
Yeah, you lost your mind. You clearly lost your mind. No, and that's...
Is that like KG and you were buddies?
No, he hated your guts the entire time. he hates looking you in the eye,
just
Tim.
The way Tim is talking about the way he controlled the game, the way he's talking about the other officials.
Want to kill Tim Donaghy. The guys, like the games that he was in, that like he was throwing. And like, if that... Like,
no,
if,
see, all those refs were cheating. All those refs were crooked. And that's the crazy thing about the NBA, is that Scott Foster still gets to officiate in the NBA's best friend. Who's
yeah, that
the
documentary,
call.
They're like, oh, yeah. Don't know about Scott Foster. No. It's like, I think we know. Anyways.
No, man. David Stern, if there's one thing you can say about David Stern, it's that guy, if you ever killed somebody and you needed to hide a body and that you could draft from any commissioner in the history
Stern,
of sports.
Number one.
It shouldn't even take you a second.
It didn't.
Yeah, like it shouldn't even. David Stern, please. Yeah, like no question.
So,
no question.
David
Stern buried what was one of the biggest controversies in the history of sports, and he just buried it.
So here's the thing about
overnight.
Here's the thing about robo-umps, and I honestly
can't have them.
I don't think robo-umps get rid of that last night. Like, you're still going to have the guys. You're still going to have the guys that, like, argue, and like, I know the balls and strikes are a big thing you argue about. But
could you imagine
really
guys kicking dirt on the robot though?
If it was robo-ump, we don't need to get into it. I know we got to go, but like, they still have a guy that would be pointing for a strike if you're doing robo-umps.
Yeah, of course.
So like, he's still going to be there. Jeff Nelson is still going to be involved in the game, regardless if you have a robo-ump or not.
No,
he's still going to be there.
No, there's just going to be, that's an internship program. You just get to stand on the field. I'm not paying
an interpretive dancer back there to give you your best strike.
I'm not paying you to call balls and strikes. Anyway, again,
I hate that guy.
Yeah, I do too. He really jumped up there. And yeah, awful, awful game for Mitch White. We didn't even really get to it. But it's just, I said it earlier.
I mean,
I made the point. But I made the point. All of the deadline guys, other than Bass, have not helped them.
At all.
They've hurt them.
It's tough.
It is.
It was a really big deadline for the Jays, and they needed impact bodies on the team, and they got one guy. And he's a really good pitcher.
He's a really good guy.
Excellent, excellent addition. But outside of that, they needed way more.
They need a lot.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's talk to Joe Thomas, one of the greatest tackles who ever lived. Baker and the Browns started off hot. Bills a little overhyped. That's next with Joe Thomas. JD and Sam, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm JD Bunkus. Shoot a follow on Twitter or on Instagram. You want to reach out anytime @JD Bunkus. You can always hit up the text line 590 590. before we read any of those, let's talk to a man in the know, Joe Thomas.
Very pleased to be joined by one of the best to ever do it, 10-time Pro Bowler, 6-time All-Pro. It's Joe Thomas. How we doing, man?
I'm doing great, man, especially now that the NFL season is upon us.
Yeah, we don't have to pretend like the preseason matters anymore. We get real games. Pretty stoked on that. Pretty stoked on that, man. Like, actually getting to preview games. It almost feels, like, surreal right now, you know? Like, that it's this close. Do you get that feeling, too, where you go, oh, my God, it's right now. Like, it's this weekend.
Yeah, it's been especially brutal since they dropped that fourth preseason game because now we have this huge, like, two-week window from the end of preseason. Yeah. In the beginning of the season, it just makes it feel even longer. And I don't know if you're a college football fan, but it seemed like the weekend slate of college football games just left me with a lot to be desired and just made me more eager for this NFL season to finally get started.
I'm guessing that maybe we're not going to see the LSU game. Like, maybe we're going to see some better special teams in the NFL. Maybe.
Yeah.
So, I got to start with this, man. I was thinking about you the other day because Jason Peters signs this contract with the Cowboys. They bring him back into the building. It's last minute, and he's a legend, right? He's a Pro Bowl player. He's someone that they can just take him off the couch, and I'm sure he's working out, and I'm sure he's doing his thing, but he can just step right into that offense, and people go, oh, yeah, that's Jason Peters. How many times in your career since your retirement have teams reached out to you and gone, hey, are you sure?
Zero, because they saw a picture of me, and they're like, hey, so about that 255-pound offensive tackle, do you think you can go out there and catch the passes for us? They saw my hands. They know I can't catch.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, we need a tight end. And you're like, I'd be the best blocking tight end. I'm so ready for this. You'd have been so sweet at blocking tight end. I'm pretty surprised, though. I would have thought that at least one team would have come by and been like, hey, we want to just take one more crack. You're right, though. I forgot how svelte you got and how it was like, hey, look at this dude. Like, he's absolutely shredded now. He's not just, like, bulked out to play offensive line. Probably hard to put that weight back on. Although it would have been so fun to be like, I'm just going to eat, man. I'm just going to eat and get ready for football again. That, like, that upside had to be a bit of a selling point. So, you know, your phone's probably blowing up this week because Baker and the Browns, week one, right? The NFL did this thing where they were like, let's get these rivalries going right away. Let's get Chargers Raiders right out of the gate. Let's get Russell Wilson and the Seahawks right out of the gate. Baker and the Browns, though, is the most contentious of them all. Like, you've got these reports that Baker was talking some trash. Myles Garrett responded in kind. What is it about these two sides that made it so, like, gave it so much animosity, dude?
Well, Baker's always been a really polarizing player going back to his time in college. And when he was with the Browns, he was obviously polarizing throughout the NFL. But even within that own locker room, you heard a lot of reports coming out of Cleveland, especially the last year or so, that, you know, there was a divide a little bit. There was guys that loved him, they were on his side, and there was guys that maybe didn't love him quite as much. And I think it compounded a little bit, especially on the defensive side of the football last season when Baker got hurt and he kind of kept putting himself in there and he didn't want to come off the field, which you give him credit for his bravery and toughness. But I think the defensive side of it, their perspective was, hey, dude, we're holding these offenses to 10 or 14 points. If you can't give us 14 points as a starting quarterback in the NFL, maybe you need to take yourself out of there, because you look at the defense down the stretch, they were doing enough to win games and the offense wasn't scoring points. And I think you combine that with maybe a little bit of the cockiness that he has, and they're thinking, hey, man, if you're going to have that swagger, that ego, that bravado, you got to back it up with some points. And so I think one of the Browns said even this week, like, there were some hard feelings, no doubt, but a few months after he left, we've gotten over it, and now it's just, you know, us versus the Carolina Panthers. And obviously it is going to mean a little bit more, but I don't think they hold any resentment to him anymore other than they want to kick his butt on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of the point that I don't know is being discussed enough in all of this, which is, how do you think his Panthers teammates feel? Because this is a guy who, like you said, does have a lot of bravado. And I like it when it's cocky Baker Mayfield, because I like it when guys are themselves, and that seems to be him. Like, it seems to be authentic with Baker Mayfield. This is how he fires himself up. This is how he made it to the NFL. He was a guy that always came with the stories from college. Like, he felt slighted. He used it as motivation. He wasn't afraid to put that out there and then go out there and back it up with his play, right? It really worked in college. It hasn't really translated so much to the pros, even though he did bring the Browns back to the playoffs. But if you're a Carolina Panthers teammate and you're trying to gear yourself up for the season and you've got a head coach that needs to get results, you know, you've got a defense that needs to come together, you've got an offense that really struggled at times this year, how do you feel about a guy that's brand new in your facility, that was late into your facility, who seemingly and outwardly is already making everything about himself?
Well, if you put it exactly like that, they probably don't really love that side of things. But I think from their perspective, they're looking at it and saying, hey, this is a guy, he's going to fight with us. He maybe brings some baggage, there's no doubt. But he brings an opportunity for us to get better and win. Like, I don't think Sam Darnold was doing it at quarterback. I think what we've seen from Baker Mayfield thus far in training camp has been that he's a pretty good quarterback, and they're going to believe in him, right? They want to believe in him, right? That's their guy, and they have to believe him. There's nobody else coming through those doors to save the franchise. So I think they're all on board right now, and they don't really care where the attention and the focus is if he goes out and plays great quarterback for the Carolina Panthers. So that remains to be seen, of course. But right now, they've got a lot of hope and a lot of belief in Baker Mayfield, and they hope that the arrogant, cocky, but also really damn good quarterback Baker Mayfield continues to show up, and then everybody's going to love him for it. It always reminds me of the Major League movies when Jack Parkman, you know, when he's wearing your jersey, you love him, right? That arrogance, yeah. That cockiness is why you love him. And when he's playing well, especially when he's on the other team or when he's not playing well, those are the reasons why you hate him.
I thought you were going to be like, he actually got laser eye surgery, or he's going to wear glasses this year, and that's he's going to make wild thing. He's going to show up there. He's actually going to be able to be a little bit more accurate with his passes. So it sounds like, you know, just like reading between the lines of what you're saying, though, that maybe you think he will find some success there.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's still a good quarterback. The reason the Browns got rid of him is not because they believe he's a terrible quarterback. They think he's a great quarterback, but he's just not at the elite level where he can take you through the gauntlet of AFC quarterbacks in the playoffs and win you a Super Bowl. And I think from the Browns' perspective, you got to give him credit. Hey, we're okay filling seats and getting to the playoffs and competing for a division. That's awesome. But we're in the business of trying to win Super Bowls and championships. So they were willing to take a risk and move on from Baker, even though he was definitely good enough to take him to the playoffs, possibly win the division if you put a good enough team around him. And so, you know, you got to give the Browns a little bit of credit for saying, hey, what's the main thing? We're trying to win the Super Bowl, or we're just trying to make sure that the fans show up and we can sell season tickets.
Yeah, the getting moving off of Baker part, I really do respect the Browns for, because I thought for such a long time in the NFL, teams would settle for mediocrity at the quarterback position because it's what they knew. And it was just way too many years of guys getting extensions. And it kind of felt like the Kirk Cousins thing. And now, weirdly enough, you know, he's been in Minnesota and he's kind of a polarizing guy. But they did the franchise tag move, right? Where they just decided, hey, we're not going to give this guy a contract. And then all of a sudden, boom, he ends up out of town and making a bunch of money on a couple of different deals. But now you're hearing stuff like in Miami, Tua, who, you know, they basically tried to tank a season to go out and get, who was their guy, their target. He's got a year where it feels like it's make or break time. I've even heard people insinuate out of New York that, like, Zach Wilson needs to get back and get healthy because they need to find out what they have in him already. Like, the guy Baker is replacing, Sam Darnold, he's a guy that basically, and again, results matter to a degree when they're that bad. You know, you can lose a job very quickly. But do you think that this is where we're heading with the NFL, where it's like, yeah, if you put up mediocrity on your first contract, it's not really going to matter. You're going to have to show more than that to get second contracts with teams, or they're just going to move on.
I think it's really two things, and I'm glad you brought up that point. One, we're seeing turnover in ownership in the NFL, right? These franchises are reaching valuations that are almost unheard of, you know, $3, $4, $5, $6 billion. So in order to be able to buy into a franchise like that, you got to be the upper 0.0001% of wealth in the world. And when these guys are buying these franchises, they're not buying it to make money. They've already made their money. They're buying it to put a Super Bowl ring on their finger, and that's their sole purpose. You know, I think gone are mostly the days of these smaller family-run organizations, kind of like the Bengals still are, where, you know, somebody's grandpa or great-grandfather had the team, bought it for $20,000 and a bus ticket back in the 20s, and this is the only source of income for the extended family, and so they're a lot tighter with their money, and they're very happy, like in Cincinnati, having Andy Dalton and rolling out there because he's going to get them to the playoffs every year. They're going to sell up their season tickets. They're going to make enough money, and they don't have to take any risks because they couldn't financially. But now you're seeing like the Jimmy Haslams, the D Haslams in Cleveland. You're seeing that down in Miami. You're seeing the turnover in franchises out in Denver, the Walmart family buying in, where they're saying, it's either for me we win the Super Bowl or it's a failure of a season. And in order to be able to do that, you got to get one of these high-powered quarterbacks with the big arm that can do it all, right? Because that's the way the NFL's gone. And the second thing that's changing the NFL and why we're seeing what we're seeing right now is how much quarterback has an influence over the success or failure of the team. Gone are the days where, good defense and a running game can get us there. And, you know, as long as the quarterback doesn't screw it up, you know, we can win. That was the 90s, right? The 2000s are the Josh Allens, the Patrick Mahomes, like the Lamar Jacksons, the games where, hey, this quarterback is either going to win the game or he's going to lose the game for us. And so you have to have one of those superstars at quarterback, or you really just don't have a chance to win the Super Bowl.
Well, I think a lot of these things tie into my next question, because when we're talking about family-run businesses, that's the Steelers, right? That's the Rooneys. And maybe that plays into part of the reason why they didn't go with Kenny Pickett. And by all accounts, Mitch Trubisky was the better quarterback in training camp, and like as he should be. He's an NFL vet. He's been around the league for a couple of seasons. They did give him some money, but were you surprised they didn't go to him? Because, again, we're looking at a league now where you really want to find out what you have, and you want to maximize the amount of years that you have a guy on a rookie contract. If it's you and the Steelers, do you think that they made the right choice?
I'm not shocked by the choice they made. It's hard for me to put my nose in there because I didn't watch any of their training camp practices. I watched the preseason. Obviously, Kenny Pickett looked really good in the preseason. From an experience standpoint, the things he's going to see in the regular season are going to be totally different. I mean, it's like basically playing college football and the vanilla defenses you're looking at in the preseason versus in the regular season when you have a defense that's entirely manufactured to make you think one thing and then give you something else and confuse you and make you hold on to the football and turn the football over. And so I think when you combine that with the fact that the Rooneys are old school conservative ownership group and Mike Tomlin is a defensive head coach. Schematically, defensive coordinators, they don't really ascend to a level of greatness and onto a head coach. It's all much more like the old school, like feel good NFL of like, we're just going to be tough. We're going to work harder than them. And like the fairy tale type things that you tell your kids. Whereas on the offensive side of the football, it's so much more about detail and high level cutting edge offenses like the Shanahans and the McVays. And what are we doing that will put our players in an advantage over the other teams so that, you know, then their individual skills and effort can shine through. So when you become a head coach through that defensive route, like Mike Tomlin, of course he's going to believe, hey, I would rather have a quarterback over there that just doesn't lose me the game. And then I'm going to try to win it on defense by playing good, sound, fundamental, technically perfect defense. And as long as my quarterback doesn't lose it for me, I'm going to be okay. So it wasn't really a shock that they went with Mitchell Trubisky, but it'll be interesting to see what happens down the line during the regular season, depending on how well the team plays, if they go and go to Kenny Pickett. One thing I will say, being that I had about 35 rookie quarterbacks start for me when I was playing in my career, is the last thing you want to do is go with the rookie when he's not ready and then have to sit there when he plays bad and bench him. Because if you ruin confidence, you end up with a Sam Darnold situation where it's almost impossible to come back from once that confidence is destroyed, because decision-making is the number one success or failure indicator as a quarterback, and a destroyed confidence is your decision-making.
Yeah, it turns out the I see ghosts out there thing may have actually been a story. Maybe it was a thing. You know, like they're like, ah, this isn't a big deal. It totally changed the way that we do mic'd ups, and then it totally changed Sam Darnold's career. Okay, so last one. You talked about those quarterbacks who can do it all, and you said Josh Allen's name first. They're favored this weekend against, or not this weekend, on Thursday, against the Rams. You look at basically everything. The Bills are the front runners this year. Like, they are the favorites this year. Do you think that we're being a little overzealous holding them up as the favorites, or do you think that's right to you?
I think we're being a little bit overzealous. I mean, it's easy to see the reasons why, right? Obviously, Josh Allen, he's probably a lot of people's favorite to win the MVP. They're bringing back 9 guys on offense. We've got a great defense. Hey, by the way, they added Von Miller. He's pretty good. I saw him in the Super Bowl. He looked all right. So it's easy to see why people love him. But I think one thing with human nature is there's a bias towards newness. Like, because we just get bored. We're looking at something that we're used to seeing success, like the Patriots for all those years. And people want to see what's new and what could be interesting that's out there, because we all have ADD these days. And with that, I'll say let's not forget about the Chiefs. I know Tyreek Hill's not there anymore, but they got a pretty decent quarterback. Let's not forget about the Chargers. Like, that quarterback's pretty good there too. So I think there's a lot of other teams that have a definite say in potentially what's going to happen. Oh, by the way, let's not forget about the Buccaneers. Tom Brady is still a pretty good quarterback. And, oh, by the way, the Rams, they won the Super Bowl last year. So let's not forget about them. And I think the Bengals, are going to be one of those teams that are not everybody's first team that comes out of their mouth right now. But with the growth of Joe Burrow and with that defense that plays so well as sort of 11 guys playing with one and playing with synergy together, I think that defense is something that really schematically carries through the NFL really well, because they can match up against anybody really well. It's not like they do one thing really well or they have one star that you can take away. This is a bunch of guys that play really well together, and I think that matches up really well in today's NFL. So I think the Bills are going to be a great team, but I think if you look at, and somebody even mentioned it, like, their chances of winning the Super Bowl are like 6% in the betting world, which means it's almost 93%+ that they're not going to win the Super Bowl. So although you have to pick a Super Bowl favorite, might be a little bit too early to put my mortgage on the Buffalo Bills.
I think that's totally fair. And I love what you said about the Bengals, because to me, they're in the perfect spot of, like, they just made a Super Bowl. They have Joe Burrow. And it feels like no one talked about them all season other than, hey, they kind of got lucky. You know, to get there, they got lucky. Mahomes melted down, and that wild card game could have gone either way. And then you look at their defense, and it's like it's all blue chippers. And they've got this quarterback that seemingly would love to feel that little notion of disrespect. And they are the Bengals, and it's an organization that, you know, we're not used to just seeing in a spot like that where they are front runners. They didn't get pushed up that way that a lot of teams that – I think, like, imagine if that had been the Chargers that made it to the Super Bowl with Justin Herbert. I think we're talking about this completely differently than the way that we are with the Bengals. I just think, like, chip on your shoulder works. And so for you to make it to a Super Bowl that early on and still be loaded, still have Chase and Burrow on rookie deals and have that defense, like, I love the Bengals this year. Like, I think that they're the team that everybody weirdly is sleeping on, despite everything being like, shouldn't be the sleep-on team.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Bengals are in perfect situation, right? And the sleep-on team is, like, exactly what led them through the playoffs last year. And the fact that they're not maybe getting the respect that they deserve, I think, right now, is going to play really well for them. And I got into it a little bit on Twitter with some people last week, because Baker Mayfield came out with his, like, revenge game T-shirts and, you know, said some things in the media, supposedly, about how he's going to beat the Browns' butts. And I just said, oh, seems laser focused. Kind of like, okay, maybe we should be worried about the game and not trying to hype up our opponent with any trash talk of a revenge game. And I think people missed the point a little bit, because they were thinking, like, oh, well, of course, he's got plenty of time to do that stuff during the week. And it's not going to give players more energy on game day to try to win. Like, because obviously everybody's going to give as much effort they possibly can, especially first week of the season. You're not tired. You're not injured. But that's not what motivation does for you when it comes to either, like, trash talk bulletin board material or the chip on the shoulder type stuff. Where that has an effect is in your preparation, right? Because that's where guys let things slip or slide if it's perceivably a bigger deal in their head or they don't have that chip on their shoulder motivation. So for Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals to go all off season, feel like they were disrespected, to me, what that does is that motivates you to work a little bit harder, to work a little bit longer. Instead of going home at 5 and going to have dinner with your wife and kids, you're saying, you know what? I'm motivated to watch 30 more minutes of film. That is real. Like, that's stuff that carries over to game day that has a lot more to do with what happened during that week or during that off season that gave you that little chip on your shoulder like Brady has had since the beginning of time when he got to the NFL, because he's older than dirt and rocks combined. But that's a real thing. Like, I get that it's not going to add energy or effort on game day, but it does make a difference in your preparation and how that team comes together throughout training camp and throughout the season.
God, that just made me so excited for football. We're here. We did it. We went through the offseason. We did it. We did it. We're here. We made it, Joe. We made it. Hey, man. Again,
you, man.
Always a pleasure getting to pick your brain. Thanks so much for making time for us today, man.
Hey, the pleasure is mine. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, Joe. It's Joe Thomas. Again, 10-time Pro Bowler, 6-time All-Pro. One of the very best who ever played the game.
Like I said, we did it. We're almost there. Football season. Right around the corner. It feels like a dream. It's going to feel like a dream to watch that first football game. It's just the best. Nothing beats it. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD Bunkus, Sam McKee, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Ennis is next.